You're listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Adam Montgomery for the murder of his daughter Harmony Montgomery from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Courtroom coverage continues now.
Kayla even admits that, yep, Adam drove Badero in Badero's car, but not while we were living in the Sebring. But not while we were living in the Sebring. Why? Because that, you understand that he was driving Badero during that time. It is why Badero is going out in the morning to see Adam, or out daily to see Adam, to get his driver. And it is why Kayla is alone with the children in the car. And it is why Adam did not know until he came back that Harmony was dead. Why does Kayla make up these truths or hide and work so hard to make you think a different story? Because the truth points to her. Sorry. What else supports that Adam was not aware of Harmony's death until he came and shook her? Wake up, baby girl. Let's talk about blood in the car. That was a lie from the beginning. She had told the police, you learned, that while she's claiming that they're all frantically pulling everything together to leave the car that has just broken down at the intersection, she said, Adam grabbed a Kleenex, I think, and wiped something down in the car. And they asked about that, and she said he had had blood on his hands from striking Harmony and giving Harmony a bloody nose. She assumed that that's what he was wiping up. And the police officer said, wait a minute, I haven't heard about blood before. What's this? She gets discovery. She knows that they found the car. She knows that there's no blood in the car. So she walks it back. And she says, no, not that day. He was cleaned up. And it was from a bloody nose from an earlier beating a few days before. So no, there was no blood in the car that day. And I started questioning her a little bit more. And so are you saying you saw no blood that day? And she said, well, there was dried blood on Harmony's face. And I said, so there was blood that day? And she said, no, that was from the days before that we talked about. Okay, well, one of the things that you learned about Blue Star is it wouldn't have mattered whether it was a few days before December 7th or December 7th. It wouldn't have mattered if Adam had tried to wipe up blood. Blue Star would have found it. And if you're talking about a beating where somebody is leaning over the seat and getting blood on their hands from a bloody nose, then that also would have left a trail somewhere in the car to be found. There was no blood found by Blue Star. And that stuff you learned can find blood years later. Trace minute amounts of blood, and it did in other places, not necessarily anything related to this. Being out in the elements, being out in swinging temperatures may or may not affect the test, but it can. And it did find DNA on the toothbrush. Those trace things last. There was no blood in the car, around Harmony, around the center console, around the steering wheel, anything to be found by Blue Star. Because that never happened. Harmony never had a bloody nose on December 7th or on a few days before. And let me talk about this bloody nose. Think about the amount of beating that Kayla tried to describe. 10 to 15 times at 2 to 3 a.m. Waking up in the morning and again, and all of it, face and head. Going to the clinic, coming out and again. beatings, driving up the road, stoplights, and again and again and again, and then saying, "Something was different this time, I think I heard her." That child would have been as bloody as you can possibly imagine. Why did Kayla slip about the blood and then back it off? There was no blood. Her story was a lie. I lose my place often. I'm very sorry. I know that you're being very patient with me. The police took this investigation very, very seriously. You heard it was one of the biggest ones that they've ever conducted. Hours and dedication of the officers can't be denied. And it's something that we all hope for in our police officers when we need them to help us. And the emotions that come with danger to a child, a missing child. Now, at the time when the investigation started, she would have been 7. Pictures. Of that adorable child. In the media, pulling in the community. Help us find this girl. The media is all over it. It's the biggest thing, the biggest investigation Manchester police did, and they dedicated time, resources, over and over and over again. The emotions had to be running high. And they kept going down wrong paths because people would give them information, whether it was that they wanted to help and they were wrong, whether it was, as Adam horribly put it in his recording, they wanted their 2 minutes of fame, or they wanted something like Kayla, maybe Rebecca Maines, or they just, who knows. They went down those black holes, and they were willing to do it. Because to not go there might mean that they miss something real. And they would not regret going down those black holes and doing all those searches. But they can, and they should, and it is right to feel anger. That never should have happened. And Adam and Caleb both could have prevented that from happening. But they lied about her death, and they covered her death up. And you can feel that emotion as well. It is okay. And you can hold Adam accountable for what he did. But emotion equally shows you that Kayla is lying. She continues to lie, and she made a few things up in front of you. Remember how you felt watching her. And evaluate that, because that will also show you. She's lying because she has something to hide still, because the truth points to her. Adam did some very, very bad things, but he did not kill his daughter. His choices got him where he is today. He has no one but himself to blame. He did what he did, and he got blamed for something he did not do. He put himself in that position. But the evidence that you can rely on remains the evidence in this courtroom and the view, not the emotion, not the horror of what she described, the slow, methodical evaluation of what she described compared to the other evidence. And can you put your trust for one of the most important decisions of your life in Kayla? Because that is what you'd have to do. There's no doubt that The police know that she's a liar. The state knows that she's a liar. She charged with perjury, lying to the grand jury. She's charged twice, but you watched her as I asked her over and over again all those questions to the grand jury. This is a lie? Yep. This is a lie? Yep. This is a lie. And some of those details that she wove around that lie that she has to admit today, those details were made to make her story seem real. But sometimes she slipped, and the truth came out, like it did when she said Harmony would wave to Tony Badero every day. Take those emotions, recognize those emotions, and put them aside like you said that you were able to do. I haven't talked about the second degree assault case at almost at all, I don't think. Kevin made the accusation. You watched. He was in a fight with Adam between Kayla and Kevin. You've heard the fight was about money as well as Kayla's black eye. And what did he say? Maybe 10 days later, he called DCYF. Well, that was investigated. Mr. Tseros came out, took a couple of times, but he came out and he talked to Harmony and he talked to Adam and he talked to the family and he checked things out. And he has a series of things that he is checking out to determine if a child is okay, if she's safe, the things to do for his investigation. And as a result of all that, nothing. Nothing. Until 2 years later, when they're investigating Adam and they want to get him, he's arrested for that second degree assault charge for what Tseros was content with the situation to hold him. So that he was in jail from January 4. Kayla went to jail a couple of days later. You also learned that it was not because, as Rebecca Maines put it, Adam hated Harmony because she reminded him of her mother. Because you heard people like Katie Morin, who said the memory bothered him. It bothered him that he had struck her and given her a black eye, struck her glasses and given her a black eye. It bothered him, even after he knew that she was dead, striking Harmony when he found her with her hand over Declan's mouth. It bothered him. And Terry Hebert, he missed Harmony. I do appreciate your patience, and I'm coming to the worst part of the case for me. It's the part where I have to stop, and I can't talk. I've got a little bit more. But I can't wring out more information from you. All the information is in, and I don't get to get up and say, but wait a minute, don't forget this. The state is going to give their closing after me. And I imagine it's going to be very different from what you just heard from me. And I can't get up and say, wait a minute, yes, this person said this, but look at the context of what they said. Look at somebody like Nicole Giles, who said, I saw bruises on Kayla's torso and on her body, and this was at the Fitz shelter before they ever went to Union, and it bothered me. Kayla's friend, Nicole, when she was first talked to at the beginning of the investigation in January of 2022, the month that Kayla and Adam were arrested, she was asked about those sorts of things, and she said, no, I never saw any sign of domestic violence. No, I didn't see anything, no. And then I think it was a year later that she comes out with this story. Everybody was affected by that picture of Harmony. Everybody was affected by the media and all the police efforts that went in to find this child. And some people wanted to contact police, talk to police, and be a part of it. But Nicole Giles, when she was first spoken to, said no. So if the state talks about what Nicole says, I won't be able to get up and say, wait a minute, she didn't say that at first. That was with all the exposure over the year. She made up that story to help her friend Kayla when she was talking neutrally without knowing anything. No DV. Let's talk about Rebecca Maines. She sounded like a pretty decent person, standing up for her wrongs in her past, taking responsibility, understanding it. But boy, did she get her hair up when Jamie, Attorney Brooks, started asking about these things. I've admitted I'm a criminal. Don't go down that road. No, she is still denying her status as a criminal because she doesn't want to hear it anymore. She got her hair up and she said no. When I talked to them in January of 2023, I wasn't looking to get anything. When I talked to them, I wasn't facing any charges. I was already convicted and in jail. Then you learned, no, she was facing charges. She was facing the charges that are still pending now. And I think she said that she wasn't getting any additional time. There are plenty of reasons that people say what they say. With Rebecca, I can't go through the changes. You heard that she had several interviews and not when, what came out when. But you do know that she did have a reason to want to give something to the police, and what she gave to the police actually didn't fit anything else. Adam worked 4 years to get Harmony. He didn't hate her because she reminded him of Crystal. He loved her and wanted her in the house with his, in his grandmother's house, with his family, his immediate family and his bigger family. And he wanted to raise her. Things absolutely fell apart after, but he didn't hate Harmony. And her story about, remember if it was urinating, peeing or pooping, putting in the corner, there's nothing about a car. She's taking bits and pieces of information that is out there in the media and trying to make her own story that's bad about Adam, but maybe can help her in her troubled situation. No, nobody can help me. I'm already doing my parole violation. I was done. Nope. There were 3 sets of charges pending, and she even corrected it. No, there's 4. And she's not expecting to do any time, I think she said, for those that were out there. Any more time. So, back to the end. You don't get to rely on your emotions. And I've seen a few times, if you've looked at your face, and it's pretty clear that there have been emotional reactions to some of the testimony. There may have been some reactions of anger when you heard Adam's recording, knowing all the time and effort and services and resources and money that was put into this case because of choices that he made. And he's saying they're wasting taxpayers' money. Yeah, you can get mad at that. But then you stop and you say, okay, that's bad. Let's look at the facts. What is proof beyond a reasonable doubt? Well, remember the recording. I think you all got a video before you came out into the big room to be determined if you're going to be chosen or not. And in that recording, they talked about different tests about what is reasonable doubt or what are the different burdens. And one burden was preponderance of the evidence. If the evidence favors one side over the other, that is a test, and that side is the side that gets your verdict. Then there's something very much higher than that, clear and convincing. And it happens in certain types of cases where you have to be clearly convinced that your verdict is correct before you can make it. And then there is something even higher, beyond a reasonable doubt, that you look at all the evidence without the emotion, and you determine, has the state proven to you beyond a reasonable doubt? Do you know, in your heart of hearts, do you know? Not that this decision seems to make you feel good. Do you know that it is right? Do you know if they have met their burden? There's any doubt, we're not talking aliens, we're not talking crazy stuff, we are talking about trusting Kayla. If there is a doubt, a reasonable doubt, there is a reasonable doubt to not trust Kayla with any important decision. If you have that doubt, you must find Adam not guilty. That is your test. And this verdict could be easy, and it could be quick, if you rely on emotion, if you rely on anger, if you rely on horror, because what Adam did, what he did do to Harmony's body after she died is horrific. What he did do by allowing that entire investigation to go for so long and make you very, very angry. And if you decide this case based on your emotions, it can be a quick verdict because none of those emotions will be positive. But if you take the time, you take a breath, and you go through the evidence piece by piece, evaluate, talk to each other. What do you think about her testimony? Some of you will remember things different from others. Talk it out. What was correct? Some of you might remember things different from what I said. I'm human. But talk it out. What is right here? What is there? What is missing? What is crazy? And what is fact? If you do that, this is a very, very difficult case because those emotions are there. If you do that, if you put it aside, you will find that Adam is not guilty of murdering his wife. He did not do that. And he's not guilty of witness tampering tape. He didn't influence her testimony at all. It was in her best interest. A lie, to hide, and to make up more lies as time went along, because the truth hurts.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to do now is we'll take a 15-minute break so that you can use the restroom, have a drink of water. Then we'll come back. It'll be the state's opportunity to make closing arguments to you. Then I anticipate that we'll probably go directly into final instructions. And at that point, once you have the final instructions, we'll select the alternates, the jury foreperson, and it will be time to deliberate. For now, just take a stretch, have a drink of water, use the restroom, and then we'll bring you back in for the rest of closing arguments and instructions. All rise for the jurors, please. counsel. Everybody ready?
Yes, sir.
Yes? Okay. Tony Smith, Chief Brooks, ready?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All rise for the jurors. Please be seated. Whenever you're ready.
Good morning again, everyone. I want to thank you very much for the time that you have spent in this case, for a journey that we told you back before we took the view was going to be a journey that you weren't going to forget. It has been a long couple of weeks. You have been incredibly attentive, and we are very, very appreciative of that. One of the things you heard just a moment ago from Attorney Smith was that she doesn't get the opportunity to come back up here and talk again. That's true. It's called taking turns. It's something that parents teach children. Beginning, state has to go first, defendant has to go second. At the closings, defendant has to go first, state has to go second. Something very simple that parents teach children. One of the other things that they should teach is if you're going to quote the defendant, if you're going to quote a witness, you have to make sure that you're accurate. So I'll apologize in advance, but let's quote people accurately. I fucked up. Again and again and again. I fucked up. I fucked up. That's what the defendant, his language, that he used when he told Travis Beach at the night he got the U-Haul, the night that he disappeared Harmony's body, to whatever place it is now, where he knows it is right now, to this day, his words, I fucked up. Not she, not we, not Kayla, I fucked up. Singular, personal, solo. That's the defendant's words. Defense counsel got up here in openings and said that you'd hear evidence that Adam Montgomery was out in the middle of the night doing his business when something happened and Harmony died. If that were so, the defendant never would have told Travis Beach, I fucked up. Adam Montgomery was no loving, caring parent, but an enraged tyrant who had no business being around young Harmony. So together, let's look at the actual evidence, the actual quotes of what you saw and heard as we look at all of the charges that you're going to deliberate on that encapsulate what the defendant did do and talk about the evidence that you've seen tells you what he committed. And we'll start first with what the defendant's telling you in opening arguments, and now, that you can and should find him guilty of abuse of a corpse and falsifying physical evidence. Let's set that as the baseline. Let's start there. Let's see what that actually means before we look at how he committed each one of the crimes charged, not just the ones that he feels are going to distract you from the rest of the nightmare that he's responsible for. Who carried Harmony's body away from the broken down car in the duffel bag, hid her outside a Colonial Village while they stayed in Anthony Badero's blue Audi for two nights, put Harmony under a ramp and then in a van and then in this cooler for weeks at Christina Lubin's house, into the CMC bag, into the walk-in cooler at Portland Pie Company, in the fridge, in the freezer, defrosted her in the shower, consolidated her body yet again, brought her to the Econolodge, tricked his friend into renting him the U-Haul, and then dumped her body somewhere. All to make sure that the evidence that could have been brought before you that shows that he's responsible for having murdered her would never be found. And he says you can and should find him guilty of those two crimes, of abuse of a corpse and falsifying physical evidence for this. He doesn't dispute this. The defense said all of that in their openings, that the defendant did both of these two bolded things. Since day two of this trial, opening arguments, you should then consider not only all of the testimony, but also all of the corroborating testimony about all of those charges, those two, falsifying physical and abuse of a corpse, to be true. So let's make it very, very painfully clear. From the indictments that you're going to be considering for falsifying physical evidence and abuse of a corpse, making this harmony fit into this and disappearing her body in the condition that it could not be found for a trial like this one, the evidence was there, and the defendant's counsel professed to you that he's not disputing that, not saying he didn't commit these crimes. So you can check these two off the list. And with that, you got to remember the defendant gets no credit for this. He says that you can and should find him guilty of these, but he's not taking responsibility for them. He hasn't admitted anything. He's not taking responsibility for anything that he did. His argument to you is not because he's taking responsibility. It's tactical. He admits what he can't deny. And he denies what he can't afford to admit. He cannot deny each and every single one of these facts that were presented to you. That she died on the 7th, that he brought her in a duffel bag to Colonial Village, stored her under a deck, into a red cooler, in the closet at Fit, in the ceiling it built. It's her blood in the ceiling at the Fit shelter at 177 Lake Ave. And his fingerprints in the ceiling, remember? Left-handed prints in the ceiling, the only other person being poor Mr. Mondrag, the drywall installer. Into the CMC bag, to the Portland Pie Company, over to Union Street, consolidating her body even more, bringing her to the Econolodge, tricking Travis Beach, and dumping her body so it wouldn't be found. The argument that the defendant is making, he had to make. His concessions don't mean he's taken responsibility for these crimes. It doesn't mean that he's a man of principle or restraint. Nor does it give his argument any credibility that because I concede all of this, well, the rest of it must not be true. The whole thing's true. And he's taken responsibility for none of this. So again, baseline, first things first, before we move on, these two charges and the charges that his counsel argued can and should find him guilty of, they're there. That's done. And that's the tip of the iceberg. It's all of the charges, every single one of them, has been proven by evidence, not emotion, beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant is the man who did all of these things. And that's because you saw the evidence. You went on the view. You saw witnesses take this stand and put themselves before you, and you looked them in the eye. And the same common sense that you use every day to tell whether somebody is feeding you a lion, a bull, or not, you used with those witnesses. And because of that, you know that this is true. Because you heard from people like Kevin Montgomery, Nick Ahern, Katie Morin, all talking about the defendant telling them in July about the worst thing he had ever done up until that point. You heard from Kayla, 2 days from Kayla, and all of the other witnesses that corroborate her, how he beat Harmony, this 35-pound child. Remember, Nurse Travers told you that she was measured just back in June before the July incident occurred. 35 pounds, 5 years old, 35 pounds. And you heard from all those witnesses, especially Kayla, about why he beat Harmony to death, when he beat Harmony, and how he beat Harmony, and you vetted what she had to say. And you saw the rest of the injuries that he incurred, and all of that was corroborated by the other evidence presented. Corroborated in ways that we'll explore that the witness never could have possibly known there was other evidence out there that supported them. Not when the defendant started telling investigators what happened and how the defendant beat the life out of Harmony. And then beat and manipulated and controlled Kayla afterwards to make sure that she stuck to the story so he would not be held accountable and the evidence of his crimes would not be found. So when he says that you can find him guilty of these, understand that these two are but a part of the whole of his criminality, of how he murdered Harmony as well. When he said this to Travis Beach, it wasn't for part of that. It was for the whole of taking Harmony's life and beyond. Don't forget what he's saying that you ought to convict him on as well. That the falsifying physical evidence and that the abuse of corpse are unto themselves evidence of the crime of murder. He's a murderer. That's getting rid of evidence. That's what murderers do. They get rid of evidence that would show others what they've done. They think, no body, no evidence, no conviction. They silence witnesses into staying silent or even perjuring themselves so that the witnesses don't tell others what the murderer did. Because murderers don't want to be held accountable for their actions. Murderers want to get rid of the evidence. They don't mind abusing the body so that the evidence of how their victim was murdered can never be found or used against them. They clean bathrooms with ammonia after they get rid of the evidence, like this defendant did. They clean out the plumbing lines, like this defendant wanted to do. They desecrate and hide the dead so that the body cannot tell the story of how they died to the living. That's what murderers do. That's what the defendant did. Because he's a murderer too. Now, let's really start now. Let's start and talk about what he did first to Harmony. Excuse me. Let's talk about what happened in June? Let's talk about the second degree assault. You will likely never forget Kevin Montgomery's testimony as he was sitting up here, taking his time to thoroughly make sure he answered truthfully and recalled to the best of his recollection. And you are never going to forget how he described Harmony's face when he flew home from Florida, having been there in July, come back on the 22nd to see Harmony in the house in the kitchen. And we saw him relive that moment for us, admitting that he asked her, quote, "Oh my God, Harmony," or "Oh my fucking God, Harmony, what did you do to your face?" End quote. And how he told us Adam answered the question. Not Harmony. Adam did. She didn't do anything. I bashed her around the fucking house. That's not disciplining a child. That's not pulling her away or jerking her and not protecting someone else. If it had been, the defendant never would have said this when Kevin asked Harmony what happened. Woody. Kevin Montgomery told you he was subpoenaed to be here. He did not want to testify against his nephew. And you saw it on his face that he remembered what the defendant said he did. Not Harmony answering the question, the defendant answered it for her. And remember how Kevin said the defendant said this. Another moment, probably not going to forget. When I asked Kevin about how the defendant said he bashed her around the house, Kevin, you'll recall, said, quote, like a cocky son of a bitch. Nick Ahern told us he saw that black eye and how bad it was. And what did the defendant do? Lied to him. Nick told us how the defendant told him that it was from an injury from playing soccer. Nick told you he only saw it for what? How many seconds? 4 seconds. Only saw it for 4 seconds. Saw how bad it was. He described it as being pretty intense, that it was concerning to him, and that the defendant let her be outside for all of 4 seconds before the defendant told her to get back inside. And what did Harmony do? She obeyed. Nick saw him walk Harmony right back through the front door and then shut it. And so why did Nick hide Harmony away that day? Because he couldn't let a 5-year-old outside on a summer day, could he? Not when her face showed the mark of the assault that he had delivered on her. Shows everyone in the neighborhood, along with Nick, evidence of what the defendant did to her. Katie Morin told us that the defendant used other words to describe that day and what he did, besides bashing her around the house. Did she say a jerk? Did she say a grab? Did she say a yank? She did not. The defendant told her it was, quote, the worst thing I'd ever done. And that he had supposedly backhanded her. That tells you that the defendant knew how badly he beat Harmony that day in July, that the defendant called it to Katie Morin the worst thing that he had ever done. And the evidence from the multiple people who saw how bad this was and who heard the defendant describe either inflicting it upon her or hiding her. Don't forget, we also have Demetrios Saros. When he first went to the house, was he able to see Harmony? He told you. Only from feet away, as the defendant was hurrying up and getting Harmony in the car and driving her out of there. And even a week later, when he finally does get to see Harmony, she still has a mark on her face. Finally, you've also got Kayla Montgomery, who told you she overheard the defendant's conversation with Kevin Montgomery and then confronted him because he told her it was from a lightsaber that one of the boys had been swinging around and Harmony got hit in the face. And she confronted him about it and said, you said it was from a lightsaber. He said, yeah, no. What I said to Kevin was correct. He admits that he lied to her before when he told Harmony, I was here, when he told Kayla that Harmony got hit by a lightsaber. More evidence that corroborates that what Kevin said happened, his conversation with Adam, where Adam admitted to hitting Harmony in July, did happen. Simply put, from multiple witnesses, from the defendant's multiple confessions, he committed the crime of second-degree assault on a 5-year-old in July of 2019, and of that, there is simply no doubt. That being said, now we can move on. Who and where and why Harmony was killed? Let's go through what the evidence showed us, one thing at a time. We saw that it was not alone with Kayla, not in the Colonial Village parking lot in the middle of the night, where Adam had gone to go do his business. Not that it was something that you heard that had happened. It was the defendant in the car on the morning of the 7th with his fists. And it was cold. We know it was cold. So cold that Badero's car died that night when they moved over into the Audi. Adam wrote to Matt Gendron, remember, that they were freezing, cold enough so that Kim Frayne went and gave them the battery pack to help give them the jump start. So we know it must have been cold enough that day that blankets in the back of a car did not appear out of place. Kayla told us how the accidents were happening, and yes, something had happened the night before, but she told you the night before was when the defendant first hit her. Why? For another accident that Harmony had had in the car. An accident that Kayla did nothing about. An accident that the defendant did nothing about and told Kayla to let Harmony lie in it. Kayla told you what it smelled like, and she told you to your face that she still did nothing about it. And in the morning, things were still the same. Kayla described for you how it started up again. It was still dark outside. She told you the first blow in the morning, it was still dark outside. We know that. Why? Because it's December 7th. Because it's before they get to the methadone clinic, and we know that the check-in times there are 7:05 and 7:09. And you know how dark it is in December, just a couple of days away from the darkest day of the year, December 22nd. When the defendant gets out of the car, goes in and gets his methadone, and then comes back, he finds Harmony has done it again. The smell of her inability to control her bladder and her bowels, something that she used to be able to do just fine for years, it's back again in his car again. The last place that he has, the only place that he has. And what does the man whom Kayla saw be so rageful do? And remember, that rageful wasn't just seen by Kayla, wasn't it? We heard from Rose Smith, the driver, years later, 2021. She told you that after giving Kayla a ride to the methadone clinic with Adam and coming back, that Kayla had had bruises that day, terrible black eyes, and that she tried to give her phone to Kayla. And her words were that when he wrenched that phone out of her hands, he told her, "You are not giving that phone to my wife." And she described his face how? A look of pure rage. What does that person do when they get back to the car after their methadone and Harmony has soiled herself again? All he has is his car and his rage and his fists. And Kayla described for you how that went on. For the length of time, that the same length of time that you took driving from the clinic here on Market Street up to the Burger King on Hooksett Road, you drove that drive. You know how long that is. And as the smell continued, she described that the hitting continued. And Harmony took blow after blow until she was moaning. And the defendant points to the fact and says, well, other people, they should have been able to see in the car. It's cold. It's dark. We know there's snow on the ground. Snow in New Hampshire means salt, which means the windows probably look the exact same that yours and mine did this morning. It's not easy visibility.
Plus, think about it.
More continuing coverage of the trial of Adam Montgomery for the murder of his daughter, Harmony Montgomery, is on the way. Press subscribe so you don't miss a moment from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.